Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most factor of an unbiased true crime channel. First on the docket, where is Brian Laundrie, and why aren't his parents helping? Second, the mess that the prosecutors have created in the Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell matters. Third, Scott Peterson is going to get sentenced before he finds out if he gets a new trial. And then we're going to bring you a story that if this does not offend you, you have no sense of justice. Pervs on planes, and then our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so already, please hit that subscribe button, hit that little bell, and of course, leave us a comment below so that we can see what you want to talk about. All right. And also, if you don't have time to watch us on YouTube all the time, you can download the podcast on any of your favorite podcasting apps. All right. Let's get straight to the docket. Where is Brian Laundrie, and why aren't his parents helping the police? Well, Brian Laundrie's been missing for nearly 6 days now, and his parents are still not talking as the search for their son continues as a person of interest in Gabby Petito's death. Laundrie's mother and father were leaving their home in Northport, Florida, this morning when they were asked if they have any information on their son's whereabouts. And they said they had nothing useful to say. Now, this has been somewhat par for the course ever since their son showed up at their doorsteps on September 1st without, of course, Gabby Petito, his fiance, even though they were on a long road trip across country. Brian's family has not been forthcoming with many details other than letting authorities know he went missing last Friday after he was named a person of interest in Gabby's death. The parents have said that he took his backpack and went for a hike and never came back. Gabby Petito's body was found 2 days later at a state park in Wyoming, a spot that she and Brian are believed to have visited in the days after they had a domestic dispute that's been documented on camera in Utah. Now, the coroners have ruled that Gabby's manner of death was a homicide, and while the obvious suspect is Brian Laundrie, he's not officially been named one by the police, at least not until they find out where he is. We will obviously give Brian Laundrie the presumption of innocence, but, well, he's got some legal troubles coming his way, that's for sure. I guess we ought to do a show about where you gotta go when you gotta go. I think that's what we need to talk about, because I think Brian Laundrie, assuming he has not hurt himself, is on his way to a foreign land, maybe on a boat in the Gulf of Mexico. Who knows? Well, yesterday we also brought you information about a woman named Nina Angelo, who detailed a chaotic experience that she witnessed when she sat in a Wyoming restaurant next to Gabby Petito and Brian Laundrie. Angelo stated that on August 27th, between a 1 and 2 p.m. Local time there in Wyoming, that Angelo and her boyfriend, Matthew England, ate at the Merry Piglets, a Tex-Mex restaurant in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Angelo and England were in town for a wedding. Now, they report that Petito and Laundrie left abruptly, and Petito was standing on the sidewalk crying, and Laundrie walked back in and was like screaming at the hostess. Now, Angelo's first thought was like they were displeased with the service and they were walking out and they were trying to get out of paying their bill. This is what Angelo says. But then he walked back in and out, and then he came back in again, like four times apparently, to talk to the manager and to basically tell the hostess off. She recalls seeing Petito was crying and Laundrie was angry, according to Angelo. Like you could tell, it was more sadness for her, and she's crying for some reason. I don't know. She says, I don't know if she was embarrassed, but this happened literally right before she was murdered. Now, the restaurant confirmed that Petito and Laundrie were present on the day in question of this account, but they would provide no further details. So, obviously, Brian Laundry is probably the most wanted person in America right now. And I think the tip as to where he is going to come from a member of the public, probably not law enforcement. It's going to be somebody that sees something they say something. The guy certainly has a presumption of innocence. He hasn't been charged with anything, but you have to admit the circumstances of him returning home without Petito, she being found deceased, Laundry disappearing, his parents basically giving him a head start to disappear, and their lack of cooperation certainly speaks a lot of consciousness of guilt. We'll see how things go for Mr. Laundry, but I think things are not going to go well. All right, next on the docket, a motion for clarification was filed in the Lori Vallow and Chad Day Bell homicide case the other day, and there was a hearing held on it yesterday. And we had this entire video up, and you can watch it. But here's what the issue is, very plain and simple. Lori Vallow and Chad Day Bell were indicted in the same indictment alleging all of the counts relating to the death of JJ Tylee, as well as Tammy Daybell. And of course, you don't forget the insurance fraud. Needless to say, we all know that Lori Vallow is down at the state hospital, basically trying to be restored to competency. It doesn't appear as though that is going to be a fast process. So what the state is basically saying is that since Lori Vallow and the case has been stayed as it relates to her, that the entire case as it relates to Chad Daybell should be stayed as well. And the court has basically rejected this argument. The people made their argument yesterday in a some 17-page motion, which really was trying to argue a lot of federal law saying, hey, speedy trial kind of comes in to play in a multi-codefendant case, and it doesn't really begin until we have all the players on board. Well, the judge says, I understand that, but you have to understand, I cannot indefinitely hold Chad Daybell's case up while we wait for Lori Vallow to be restored to competency, if she ever is. You have to remember, Chad Daybell is in custody. Maybe if the state wants to give him a personal recognizance bond, then they may have a better argument. But this is the problem that the state created, and the state is going to have to deal with it. The reality of it is, and the prosecutor states this in their motion, specifically on page 12, basically that it's going to be really prejudicial to the state to have two sets of hearings. And guess what? There may be some evidence that we may not be able to bring in against one defendant that we would like to be able to bring in against both defendants if they're both sitting there. Well, that's what happens. You know, what happens if Lori Vallow had been released and disappeared, right? The case would still have to go on. And then, of course, the state is saying, hey, we really don't want to do this again because we'd have to do everything twice. And that may give, well, you know, Lori Vallow's attorneys a better bite at that apple in this case. And we don't want to have to do it twice. It's inconvenient. It's going to be expensive as we have to bring in all our experts and everything twice. And basically the judge was like, okay, I've heard your argument, but this man, referring to Chad Daybell, has a constitutional right to a speedy trial. Yes, he waived his right to a speedy trial for a 6-month period, but that is not an indefinite waiver, particularly when somebody is in custody. And I have said this all along. If you go back and look at our previous videos, Chad Daybell should absolutely be demanding his right to a speedy trial. Why? Because his defense has always been and is going to be is that Lori Vallow is crazy. That's right. And in a co-conspirator case, you want to be able to point the finger at somebody other than yourself, particularly Lori Vallow, and say that he was duped. And guess what? His argument may be getting a little better. Why? Because apparently Lori Vallow duped everybody because she is not competent to proceed. So what I have said early on was that the defense would be, hey, I got played by this lady. I had nothing to do with the disappearance or deaths of JJ or Tylee. It was Lori Vallow and her brother who was probably crazy too. That's the defense. It's going to be that simple. And the fact that she is in fact crazy certainly helps Chad Daybell a lot. Now remember, Mark Means originally wanted to have a joint trial, even though John Pryor, on behalf of Chad Daybell, objected to having a joint trial for obvious reasons. Now that Mr. Archibald, the new attorney for Lori Vallow, is on board, he may say, we don't want to be joined with Chad Daybell either, because our defense is going to be is that Chad Daybell is the master manipulator of this cult-like organization that we were in, and he obviously made me crazy, and if I did anything, I was crazy, but he's the one that's responsible. Bottom line, that's where it is. The prosecution created this mess by indicting them the way they did. Now they're going to have to live with it. I don't see the judge changing his mind. He has to respect the constitutional rights and a speedy trial right that is owed to Chad Daybell. It's time for the prosecutors to put on their prosecutor pants and go try the case. And if they've got to do it one time or two times, guess what? By the second time, you've already had a dry run at it. You're going to be even better. So embrace what you have to do. Don't worry about it. Go embrace the suck and just get it done. All right. Next on the docket, Scott Peterson. He's going to get resentenced. That's right. The judge plans to resentence Scott Peterson to life without the possibility of parole this fall. Now, Scott Peterson has spent more than 15 years on death row for the 2002 murders of his pregnant wife and his unborn son. And like I said, it'll be life without parole. Superior Court Judge Anne Christine Masullo said that she wants to sentence Peterson in November before deciding whether he deserves a new trial over alleged juror misconduct issues. The court set an October 6th hearing date to set another date to resentence him to this life without the possibility of parole. As you may recall, the California Supreme Court overturned Peterson's death sentence last year because jurors who personally disagreed with the death penalty but were willing to impose it were improperly dismissed. And prosecutors said this time around that they would not seek the death penalty if Peterson was granted a new trial. The court basically said that they found there was considerable circumstantial evidence incriminating Scott Peterson in the first degree murder of Lacey Peterson, who was 8 months pregnant, and the second degree murder of the boy that they planned to name Connor. Now, a quick summary for our viewers who may not recall the Peterson case issue regarding the alleged juror misconduct. Now, prosecutors said that Peterson took his wife's body from their Modesto home on Christmas Eve of 2002 and dumped her in the San Francisco Bay from his fishing boat. The body of his wife and the boy's fetus washed up ashore in April of 2003. Peterson's lawyers are seeking a new trial on allegations a juror committed misconduct by falsely answering questions during the jury selection process known as voir dire. Now, defense lawyers said the woman, who co-authored a book and, well, basically was a little too eager and sought to be a juror in this case and didn't disclose that she had, in fact, been a victim of a crime, a domestic violent crime to be more specific. Now, the woman known only as juror number 7 did not reveal during jury selection that she had been beaten by a boyfriend while pregnant in 2001. She also didn't disclose that during another pregnancy, she had obtained a restraining order against a boyfriend's ex-girlfriend whom she feared would hurt her unborn child. Now, the judge denied a defense request to take the deposition of the juror and witnesses to those crimes against her, but said she could be questioned during an evidentiary hearing. Well, it gets even more interesting. The juror has said that she won't testify at the hearing unless she is granted immunity from the prosecution on a possible perjury charge, according to her attorney. If not, she will invoke her Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. So a couple of issues there. First, the case gets dismissed. Why? Because the prosecutors and the court dismissed jurors that were willing to impose the death penalty. In a death penalty case, the jurors have to be death qualified. What does death qualified mean? It means that they have to be prepared to impose the ultimate punishment, that being death. If you say as a potential juror that you cannot consider imposing death, you are excused from jury duty because you cannot follow the law. Well, the alleged juror number 7 in this particular case has some problems. She wasn't completely truthful and candid during that voir dire process where they're supposed to speak the truth. That's what voir dire means. It's a French term. And if you're holding back information that is relevant, where you cannot be completely fair and impartial to both sides, guess what? It results in an unfair process. So that is the problem for juror number 7. And the fact that the prosecutors are not willing to give her immunity, at least not yet, and that she wants to take the 5th, says that she has some problems. All right, next on the docket. If this does not offend everyone's highly refined sense of justice, well, you may not have a sense of justice. A death row inmate's murder conviction is overturned after the prosecutor was found to be working for the judge that he was prosecuting. That's right. The highest criminal court in Texas overturned the death sentence of death row inmate's capital conviction after discovering one of the prosecutors in his trial that took place back in 2003 was simultaneously clerking for a judge presiding over the case. The quid pro quo between the Midland County State District Judge John Hyde and then prosecutor Weldon Petty was in violation of Clinton Young's right to a fair trial. This is according to the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. You don't need to be an appellate court judge to reach that decision. Well, Young was sentenced to death in the shooting of a man during a 2001 drug spree that was hitting Texas. Now, the judge died in 2012, but Midland County prosecutors uncovered the paid agreement between Hyde and Petty, who was also working for another district court judge. And judicial and prosecutorial misconduct in the form of an undisclosed employment relationship between the trial judge and the prosecutor appearing before him tainted the entire proceeding from the outset. This is according to the court's opinion. As a result, little confidence can be placed in the fairness of the proceedings or the outcome of Young's trial. The appeals court noted that as a prosecutor, Petty would oppose defense motions while also drafting recommendations and orders for the judge to sign. Now, as part of the legal team prosecuting Young, Petty drafted the legal motions submitted during the trial and sometimes even participated in oral arguments. Petty's side agreement with the judge, Judge Hyde, was to perform legal work as a judicial clerk outside of his official duties. It paid him about $9,000 over the time spanning Young's initial indictment, trial, and post-conviction appeals, which Petty handled both as a prosecutor and as a clerk for the judge. The appeals court ordered Young to be removed from death row and sent back to the Midland County Jail under his original indictment. Now, the district attorney, Laura Nodolf, who was elected in 2016 and who later discovered the paid agreement between the prosecutor and the judge, said that her office has been recused from Young's case going forward, and any decision whether to retry him is not going to be involved in their office in any way. Now, if Mr. Young is in fact retried, I anticipate he would be, it needs to be of the cleanest slate possible, according to Ms. Nodolf. And the most ethical thing would be for them to take a step back and let another office take a look at the case. Now, Petty, who worked as a full-time prosecutor in Midland County from 2002 through 2019, is retired. And during an evidentiary hearing, he refused to testify about his paid work for the judge, citing a constitutional privilege against self-incrimination, the court noted. That's right. It's called taking the 5th, just like the potential juror number 7 in the Peterson matter. You decide. Let me know what you think. Was that offensive or what? We've all heard of the movie titled Snake on Planes. Well, the new movie should be Pervs on Planes. And let me give you another example of why. An Indiana man pled guilty on Wednesday to sexually abusing a teenager on a flight from Indianapolis to Colorado. And according to federal prosecutors, they announced this decision yesterday. On October 6th of 2017, Ian Wagner was seated on a flight next to an 18-year-old he did not know. The indictment noted that Wagner knew the sleeping teenager was incapable of apprising the nature of the conduct and physically incapable of declining participation in and communicating an unwillingness to engage in the sexual contact. Well, when the teenager woke up mid-flight to find Wagner rubbing her inner thigh, she pulled her leg away, took a picture of him, and got up to use the restroom and look for another seat. Kudos to this young lady because she came forward. She acted smart. I must give her credit for this. Now, prosecutors say that she returned to find Wagner with a jacket over his lap, moving his hand up and down beneath it and staring at her. You let me know what you think he was doing. Wagner then lifted the jacket to expose his genitalia to the woman and continued to stare at her while pleasuring himself for at least 6 minutes. Needless to say, U.S. District Court Judge John Girard wrote in summarizing the allegations, the judge was not pleased. Eventually, Wagner stopped pleasuring himself, zipped up his pants, and sat with his jacket on his lap, staring at the victim for the remainder of the flight. Now, the woman obviously complained to Frontier Airlines, and you know how I feel about Frontier Airlines. And she identified, the young woman identified Wagner as the perpetrator. He was ultimately indicted on September 24th of 2020, a little less than a year ago. Now, authorities arrested him in Fort Wayne, Indiana, a few weeks later. And the prosecutors revealed on the road to trial that the Indiana authorities compiled at least four separate reports of Wagner previously being seen pleasuring himself in his car in public as dating far back as 2013. The year Wagner allegedly appeared to be fondling himself outside of a gas station before entering the station and taking a photograph underneath the skirt of a woman ahead of him in line. Wagner then allegedly returned to his van and continued to pleasure himself. When the police arrived, his pants were apparently unzipped as well. When the police questioned him as to what he was doing, he of course denied any of the accusations and said he was not pleasuring himself. Well, a year later, a witness claimed to have seen Wagner pleasuring himself while parked at a dance studio where his daughter and a witness's daughter both took classes. Yep, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. He has children, and he's just a perv. Now, the witness claimed to have recognized both Wagner and his three-year-old, who was said to be in the back seat of the vehicle. Yep. The two other alleged incidents took place in the parking lots of Target and a grocery store. A woman allegedly witnessed the latter incident, recounted hearing the sound of what she described as a frigano and Wagner saying, quote, dirty smells, end quote, and come touch me, end quote. Wagner tried to suppress the evidence of his alleged prior acts because he's never been convicted of those offenses, but the judge denied that motion. That's, ladies and gentlemen, what they call 404B evidence, evidence to show identification, absence of mistake. Well, he pled guilty to one count of abusive sexual contact on Wednesday, just a few months after his defeat in court. He's now scheduled to be sentenced on December 15th, and he faces up to 3 years in prison. And he will also be required to register as a sex offender. Forced is what he did to that young lady by putting his hand on her inner thigh without her consent or permission. And for some reason, I don't know why, but this reminded me of another guy that I heard that got in trouble doing some inappropriate things on a plane. Now, he didn't get charged for anything that was on a plane, but it involved alcohol. Well, and he was a former state rep in Wisconsin, a guy by the name of Bill Kramer. Well, he was sentenced to 5 months in jail after he pled no contest, because only if you're a public official do you get to plead guilty to no contest, right? South Dakota Attorney General, right? Everybody else has to actually plead guilty. Well, just like the Attorney General in South Dakota, this Bill Kramer guy He got to plead no contest and he got sentenced. Whereas he was looking at, you know, 80 years in prison, he pled the charges down to two misdemeanors of fourth degree sexual assault. Now, the jail was a condition of a 3-year probationary sentence. And he was, of course, allowed to have work release while he was serving that sentence. He was going to have a sex offender evaluation, an alcohol evaluation, and required any treatment that he may have to do. He couldn't have any contact with any of his victims. And like I said, he must maintain absolute sobriety. And what else would he have to do? Well, he couldn't enter any bars where their primary business was serving alcohol. And how did that happen? Well, apparently he would like to go to parties with staff and lobbyists, and he would basically make inappropriate comments to people. Now, how did all this come about? Well, there was an allegation on a plane. And when people heard about that, staffers started to come forward and saying that, well, that the good representative, Kramer, was also touching and sexually harassing them as well. And his key words would be that he would say, "I thought we were friends. Why can't we be friends?" Usually in an intoxicated state. He, of course, did have to resign because remember when all this went down, he was a majority leader of the House. He ultimately didn't seek re-election, which is a good thing. But the allegations were that he shoved a woman into a car, tried to kiss her, and touched her indecently and made inappropriate comments to her. This was outside of a political event at a tavern. Now, this went back to 2011. Now, the charges followed. Of course, you know, Kramer said that the woman was lying. And he, of course, was ultimately... this couldn't have happened, even though there were other allegations that came up against him by legislative aides, lobbyists as well, at a fundraiser in Washington, D.C. There were, I think, even allegations of incidents in Arizona as well. This guy was a full-time creeper, and yet nobody, I mean nobody, ever said anything to stop him. It wasn't until one person came forward and said, "Hey, this isn't right," but yet all those other people out there allowed it to go on because why? He was in a position of power. And of course, when Kramer was being sentenced, what did he say at his sentencing? "You considered me a friend and I violated that friendship." That's right. That's what he said, because that's what he told everybody else. "I thought we were friends." Well, former representative, majority leader in Wisconsin, Mr. Kramer, that's right. Pervs on planes. It exposes people. Sometimes people just can't help themselves, can they? Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, we had the international contestant earlier this week. Now we have repeat contenders. Remember the South Carolina couple who pled guilty earlier this year to multiple indecent exposure charges, one of which involved a sex act in a glass gondola on the Myrtle Beach Skywheel? Well, they were arrested again today for, guess what? Alleged illicit acts in public. Lori Harmon and Eric Harmon were booked into the jail, into the Horry County Jail, on indecent exposure charges. Now, the couple, they've been married for 17 years. At least they got a lot of passion after that 17 years. Well, they were charged with participation in preparation of obscene material. And according to the arrest warrant, the Harmons, in late July, engaged in a sex act while inside a photo booth at an arcade. Now, video of Lori fellating Eric was posted on Twitter, according to the police. And Lori is also accused of exposing herself and participating in sex acts with other individuals while on the front porch of the couple's residence. Now, Eric was charged with preparation of the obscene film that occurred at the incident location. Footage was also posted on Twitter of that as well. Now, the Harmons are pictured in their mugshot that they posted on their Instagram. You gotta like these people. I mean, geez, they just go all out and don't have anything to hide, do they? Well, the Harmons were arrested twice earlier this year in connection with a series of indecent acts, many of which they recorded in Myrtle Beach and nearby Surfside Beach. the town where the couple resides. Now, in April, the Harmons pled guilty to that indecent exposure, and they were each sentenced to 3 years, a penalty that the judge suspended. That was 3 years in jail, but the judge suspended that in favor of a 2-year probationary term. Well, that new arrest will more than likely trigger a probation violation, and if they are found guilty of this new charge, guess what? Not only do they get sentenced on the new charge, they also get resentenced on the old charge. I think this couple, they're going to jail, and they're not going to be able to be together, and I'm not sure they're going to be able to do that. Now, I think it is worth noting that their attorneys mentioned last time at sentencing that they learned a tremendous lesson in what you can do at home versus what you can do in public. Now, I feel the pain of their attorney when you say things that you not only are saying it to the court, but you're also saying it to your client in hopes that they get that word. Well, the Harmons, they are dumb criminal contestants of the week because obviously they didn't get the word of the judge. They did not get the fear from the suspended sentence. That's right. They are high rep learners. They clearly don't get this, that you can't do certain things in public. They, the Harmons, are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. If you win, and I'm rooting for you, I think you deserve it, we'll send not one, but 2 Crime Talk mugs to you both. And you can take these in public and drink in public. Just don't do anything that should go on in the bedroom in public. All right, Harmons? I'm rooting for you. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.